connection. I started to want that connection more and more and more and more. So I just said, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to try and do a podcast. And I'm like, no, what do I do? What do I do? So I run in the kitchen and I grab my work phone off the charger. I ran the bathroom, lift up the shirt, snapped the picture and was like, I did it. What we tell ourselves is, oh, I'm tired or I need to relax or I need to rest. Dude, I'm going to bed at, you know, 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and I'm not missing a beat. Everything, when you first get into it, is about the sex appeal, you know, bugling bulls screaming in your face. And then you get to the Elk Woods and it's not the case. We got to impact that. And part of us having that impact is going out there and managing that predator population. Hey, this is Guy Duplanche, or as Sam said, Guy, you asshole with that last name, of Western Contours Podcast. And you are listening to The Wild Initiative.
Put down your latte and pull on your boots.
I've been blessed to harvest 22 of the 29 North American animals with my bow.
My personal 24-hour record for death threats is 88.
They will start putting two and two together and realize this is how you call bulls in.
So when I go hunting now, that's the ethos I take with me. You know, whatever this hunter's going to throw at you, you pull your big girl pants up and you get on with it.
Giant bucks are freaking awesome. They're beautiful. But you know what? I would not trade this first buck for anything in the world.
So I'm a geek. Magicians and dragons and magic swords. I kid you not, man. I'm the biggest dork in the gun business.
I'm Freddie Hartice, Hollywood Hunter.
This is Aaron Snyder.
Hey, this is Trevin Stoltzfus with Outback Outdoors.
This is Rihanna Carey.
Hi, this is John Sloan of the Interviews with the Hunting Masters.
You're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Hey, y'all, welcome to another episode of The Wild Initiative, brought to you as part of the Waypoint Outdoor Collective.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
All right, y'all. So getting on to today's episode, I'm sitting down with Guy, you asshole for that last name. Oh, man. You know, it's funny. You know, start the podcast and this could have been, we were talking earlier, this could have been one of those bad ones where we end up talking for like 2 hours before I ever actually hit the record button. And they're like, well,
hey, we've been going,
I guess we'll just find another time to record the episode.
We've done about 27 minutes of talking. I mean, we actually had some good stuff going there.
I was going to say, well, and as we started getting into stuff and I'm like, yeah, we need to start this, because then you like try and recreate it. And I've had this talk with a lot of guys, like you try and recreate it after the fact. And it's so lame. You know?
Yeah. It's like losing. I don't know if you've ever done that, right? Where you record an episode and somehow you lose it into the space there, we'll say. And then you try and sit back down and it's never the same recording. It's like, man, I've lost a couple good ones that way.
Knock on wood, man. Sucks. I don't think I've never fully lost a podcast. I'm trying to think if I may have started one late, and that was, I think something happened with the internet connection and we just started over. Like, we were 5 minutes in, so
that ain't bad.
Wasn't too bad. I did have one that I recorded, and I'm curious if anybody listening, if anybody listening can guess which podcast episode it was, I don't know, I'll send them some or I'll feature you on Instagram. So if you're listening, you can figure out which podcast episode this was and send me a message on Instagram or on my email. I recorded an entire podcast episode and it was one of my longest ones at the time. And I didn't check my mic settings. My whole end of the podcast was recorded on the laptop microphone. Like the built-in one. So it's all like noisy and tinny. And I was typing notes and all this stuff. and it sounded horrible. Like, it, so I went back and I re-recorded my side of the podcast, the entirety of it. It was over an hour. So that'll narrow it down for folks. It was over an hour and I had to re-record my entire side of the damn podcast.
Was that under the Wild Initiative podcast, or is that
living? I'm not making it that easy for I was trying to help you folks.
That's well, like we were saying earlier, right? This is episode 199. So that's almost 200 episodes of scratching their heads. I was trying to narrow it down.
I mean, I know there's some folks out there, you know, probably my best bet as to who it'll be. It'll probably be Mike Hale. He's been listening since like episode 4 or 7 or something like that. And so if anybody can guess it, I would bet it would be him. He has actually a really cool story. He's been listening for a long time. I had him on as a bonus episode guest. He won a competition and we've never like we he and I've been talking friends for a while and we've never really talked about his history, but hunting saved his life. Like, you know, the doctors were like, you should be dead. And it was getting fit for hunting that literally saved his life. And he's got a cool story, man. So if you guys haven't listened to that episode, go look up Mike Hill's episode. It was one of my bonus episodes. But man, so you know how I like to start out. Tell us all a little bit about you, man. Give us your background. How'd you get introduced to hunting and the outdoors and all of this stuff, man?
First off, man, I appreciate you having me on, man. It's always an honor when I'm asked to be on the other side of the microphone. So I appreciate it greatly. I met you 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago or something like that. You know, I've listened, you know, back, you know, living country in the city. And I've always enjoyed it, man, the way your approach is. So thank you very much for having me on. Shit, man, hunting. You know, so I started hunting in my 20s, my early 20s. It was something that I was just enamored by, right? I remember, you know, I grew up camping and fishing here in Southern California, Central California. And I remember seeing pigs on the side of, you know, Lake Kachuma, seeing deer on the side of Lake Kachuma as we're out there fishing. And it's just something that always struck me. So it's, you know, early Saturday mornings, waking up, catching, you know, Bill Dance and then whatever hunting programming was on. And most of that stuff was, you know, tree stands and back east, down south type stuff. So I had no clue, didn't really have the means to do it. And it wasn't something that my family was into. I have an uncle that he would go on an annual elk hunt, you know, when I was a kid. And then my grandfather, he was a wing shooter, but it was like a once a year trip that him and one of my uncles would do. And they would go to some lake in Mexico. And I'm sure, you know, and my story is that they would frequent the whorehouses. And that was probably most of the trip, I'd imagine. And that's really the only exposure that I had outside of, you know, what was on TV. And then, you know, started grabbing, you know, Eastman's and whatever little VHS tapes and stuff like that. And it was just something that was just like, it was a part of me as much as it wasn't, right? If that makes any sense. Like I gotta get my hands in this. And, you know, it was a means thing. When I had the means to do it, it was like, I'm giving this a whirl. I got on eBay. I bought a $200 Matthews bow. I had no idea about draw length or nothing, right? This guy had a bow. He had the whole nine release and everything. And I shot that bow for probably a good 5 or 6 years and just, you know, self-taught, man, figured out how to do it here and just went after it. And that was downhill, as they say. It consumes me. It consumes just about every waking moment. In one way, shape, or form or the other. And then now, you know, my kids are both grown and my daughter's out of the house, son is semi out of the house going to school, and I have the time, and it's just, you know, it's go for broke. They were both fall athletes. So for a while it was, you know, it's always family first, period. And then I coached and wouldn't miss games and things like that. So I would have very limited time as they were coming up to go out and actually enjoy it. in the last few years, man, it's been, you know, it's been just hell on wheels with me. And then once my boy stopped playing football and focused on his academics, I looked at my wife and I said, it's go time. and there's no looking back at this point, man. It's just, you know, it's what I want to do. It's my passion. And just about everything I do in some way, shape or form, it leads to that end.
So you're going whole hog in hunting. What then possessed you to start a podcast? And tell us a little bit about the podcast.
Okay. That's an easier question than the hunting question. So, I mean, you know, you're from California, right? So, you know how it is here, right? There's not a lot of connection with hunting. There's connection with the outdoors per se. You know, when you talk about the beach and the mountains and snowboarding, things like that, fishing like crazy. And when you look at hunting, you're an outcast, right? You're an outlier. There's not a lot of folks that even understand that it's available here. They don't even understand as they're walking around the local mountains that there's deer and mountain lion and bobcat and bears roaming around. So it was really a way for me to connect. It was a way for me to be a part of something that I longed to be a part of for so long. In a nutshell, some of it initially was, man, this is cool. Like, how do I get into that realm, right? That industry or, you know, that click or whatever it is. But then it's kind of evolved over time. And I realized that the people that are involved in this lifestyle, this passion, this sport, however you view it, are some of the best people that you'll ever come in contact with. And there's people that'll argue that, right? But I think that the hunting demographic and the values that you find within the hunting community and it's just solid people, man. And so I started listening to podcasts, right? Yours was one of them. And no offense to anyone who's doing anything, but there's a group of people that are on podcasts for the most part. At least now it's a little bit broadened, but there was a group of people that were on podcast and it was like great resources, right? Great information, but it didn't strike my chord. It didn't strike the chord of I'm this yahoo trying to, you know, undertake something. I have nothing. I didn't grow up doing this. I could relate to the information that they were providing, but I couldn't connect. And I would go to the range. And then, you know, as I started to loosen up and talk to people, or you go to the pro shop, and I use that term very loosely for Southern California. and you meet that one-off guy that, you know, you have a conversation with, man, and you're like this dude's story is my story or how I see it. And that connection, I started to want that connection more and more and more and more. So I just said, you know what, screw it. I'm going to try and do a podcast. I didn't know any other way to do it. And I just started, you know, reaching out. And then it's kind of been a downhill ride from there, if you will. I just wanted to hear the stories, man. I wanted to consume it. I wanted to be out there. I wanted to gain more knowledge. I wanted to just hear those, you know, air quote campfire stories. That sounds cliche as all hell, but you know, that's what it was.
Well, that's one of those things is like, some of my favorite episodes are with these dudes that are just like storied in the outdoors, you know, mm-hmm. and that have been through it. And I sit down and talk with these people and, you know, I'm sure you've had those folks on too, where you talk to someone and they're like, yeah, you know, I grew up like watching Will Primo's videos and, you know, getting real tree monster bucks. And this is what I didn't have that experience. And yeah, I could go back and try and artificially create that by, you know, whatever, buying those videos off of eBay or watching them on YouTube or whatever, but it's not the same. But for me, like having those guys on and getting to hear those stories from a lot of them firsthand, then that's kind of what it is for me, and getting kind of filling in that little bit of void of that kind of storied history in the outdoor industry. And I think that's, you know, that's one of the things I love about the podcast. And anybody that listens knows I'm all over the place with this thing, man. Like, you never know what you're getting with the next episode.
But I mean, that's the I guess that's the plus about doing it yourself, right? Is It's how you see it. It's what you see fit. And yes, we want to deliver content that people are interested in and provide some, you know, to some extent, some educational value. But it's however you view it. And that and really, that's the beauty of hunting, right? That pursuit is just that. It is how you see it. It's 110% all you. You make it what it is. Your perspective on it, we use trophy, right? The trophy, and it's cliche shit. I love cliches. Oh, there's a reason for them. That trophy is really your perspective in that pursuit. And that's the beautiful thing about it. Like, there's no judgment. I love hunting with folks, right? But I've predominantly been a solo hunter. And part of that is because I'm here. The other part of it is I get to do the shit. Excuse me. I get to do it my way, right? How I see fit, how I feel it works for me. And there's no judgment there. If I'm judging myself, right, we're our own worst critic. So I can beat myself up with no one around to blame. I can't say my buddy blew the deer or elk, which they do. They know who they are. You know what I mean? But it's just the beauty in the pursuit, man. Just doing it your way, whether it's the podcast or in the woods, that's hunting. So it's a beautiful thing, man.
You know, it's funny. I was just talking with earlier today, a couple of guys about it. And we were talking about the knife making stuff, and somebody made a comment and he's like, you know, you pick stuff up like so quickly. And I've always been like that. Like I invest in skills and I pick them up quickly. I don't necessarily become an expert at them, but I can become competent at something quickly. And hunting was not like that at all for me. And that was one of my frustrations. And I think I've said it on the podcast before, and it sounds kind of arrogant to say, but I'm not used to being bad at shit. Like, right. And I'm pretty bad at hunting. I've gotten a lot better in the past 4 years, but I think so much of that is because, and this is what we were talking about, is that I really do love hunting solo. And there's lots of reasons for that. Some are good reasons. Some are prideful reasons, whatever it happens to be. You know, I love being out there and knowing I can rely on myself and testing myself, seeing how mm-hmm. capable I am as a person, as a man, you know?
Yeah.
But then there's also a slight aspect of it to where, you know, you hunt with someone else, same kind of thing. Like, for me, it's always like, if I'm hunting with someone else, I'm a little nervous and I don't want to F up their hunt. Like, I don't want to be the one that blows their stock, because I'm like huffing and puffing up a mountain. I don't like slowing them down.
Right.
And that's a prideful side of me that I need to get rid of, because I know they're not. Yeah, some people are probably thinking that. They're like, dear Lord, Sam, just you're breathing like an 80-year-old man walking up the stairs right now. Come on.
Oh, that's me, dude. I'm an ass. Like, with my hunting buddies, I don't see how they deal with me. I'm not going to even bullshit it. My one buddy, he turns his head and he laughs and he's like, oh, here he comes. And the horns come out quick, dude. They come out quick.
I was the hunt with John Stallone, like, because I went out with him for my Arizona elk hunt this year. And man, he would turn around and, you know, he was giving me a little extra grief because we're buddies. You know, he wouldn't do that normally with any client that he'd be out. But he'd turn around and he'd just give me these looks like, I would kick the tiniest little rock. And for me, like, thinking I just barely made a noise, he'd look at me like, oh, yeah. I just like dropped an F-bomb as loud as I could in the middle of the woods or something. Yep. He's like, dude, look, how loud are you?
that's it. I mean, that's the thing, like, going solo, you don't hear those noises, right? So, you know, when you're out there and you're moving through the woods, man, and then now you're going to add a guy or two. And it's just like, you know, you're like, oh, and I'll bite my tongue. And then I'll turn around like, what the eyes are all big. Like, you son of a bitch.
Oh, man. There's so much. Like, I will say, the times I have gone hunting with other guys, though, I feel like I'm like, why don't I do this more? Like, I learned so much more. I have such an incredible time. And, you know, recently my forays have been more into widening my variety of hunting, you know, mm-hmm. especially this year. You know, I started fly fishing more. I went upland game hunting. I did some pheasant hunting with some buddies recently. I've done more waterfowl hunting recently, and it's all stuff that I always told myself I want to do, but I never just took the time, because dude, elk season. I mean,
right,
nothing trumps elk season. Like that's how life
that's
is.
That's where I'm at. Cause I would go, I'd go out to like the pheasant farm with my boy when he was smaller, you know, and have him plant out some pheasants just to get out in the field. Any little dove hunt now, dude, it's like, okay, I can go, you know, hunt pigs, or I can get ready for elk season. And everything, you know, matter of fact, was saying, like, yeah, I'm gonna go on a pig hunt here in a couple of weeks. And then we have our early archery deer that starts in, I think they screwed us again this year. I think it starts in August. We only get like 3 weeks of archery deer in August now, where it was like 5 weeks before. But that's the precursor to elk season, right? That's like, okay, we're drawing back on deer on the average at 80 yards. And the country sucks. It's 115 degrees. And are we ready for elk season? And that's all I could think of, you know. And last year we went, and usually we'll go every single week for 5 weeks. And we leave Friday, Friday afternoon, Friday evening, and we're back Sunday night. And last year, I think we went out probably 2 or 3 weeks. And I was just like, man, forget it. We saw pigs, 250 pigs, like every weekend. It was just crazy. And it was just like, man, screw that pig. If I can't, you know, we wanted the buck. And then it was just like, forget this heat. Elk season's coming. Let's focus on that. So I'm kind of the opposite, man. I've let things go to the wayside to chase the wapiti, man. They have me hyper-focused.
Well, and I wouldn't even say that that I'm sacrificing anything to do all this other stuff. I'm still really doing all the same stuff I would normally be doing. I'm just taking advantage of those opportunities better as time comes up, and realizing I'm starting to realize how much time is wasted on other stuff, right. How much time I convince myself that I'm spending preparing for elk season versus how much time I'm actually using to prepare for elk season. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm spending all this time. I'm like, okay, maybe about 40% of this time that I think I'm spending is actually legitimately spent preparing for elk season.
Oh dude, I got a schedule. I wish I had it here. I'd show you. I have my calendar, and it is spelled out in preparation for elk season. Like there is no, I can't waste it.
Honestly, this right here, I think could be something valuable. Let's walk us through the calendar. I think people could actually get a lot of value out of something like this.
So what I did Sunday, I scheduled my week, right? So it's a little different now. So about, I don't know, it seems like a month ago, I saw the 75 hard thing. So I said, you know what? I like to do stuff because I can do it. Mm-hmm. So I said, I'm going to do 75 hard. So it's kind of added some stuff to it. The value there is the little bit of time that I was wasting is absolutely not being wasted. So it's like wake, sleep, and everything in between in my head. Even the reading portion of it is getting ready for elk season. Anywho, so I shoot every day in the yard. And then 3 days a week during the week, I go to the range. And then I have a focus at the range, depending on where I'm at with it. So like the other day, I did a mid-range cadence is what I call it, right? So as I draw back at 20 yards, I have a cadence, right? There's a timing to it, my target acquisition, and when I decide to release that arrow. The reason I work on my cadence is as we drop back, right, the perception of that target being smaller shouldn't change that cadence. So I'll work on aspects like that. Out to my max distance, target max distance, which is about 120 yards at my range. So that's, you know, through the week. Plus now it's two workouts. And then Saturdays I do a mountain run because I was on the mountain one day and I go, damn, I would love to be able to get my lungs to the point where I could run from this point to that saddle on the mountain. So Saturday mornings are spent on that run. I injured for... My third week, I think I injured my foot somehow. I think I might have strained it. I'm not a small guy. and trying to run. So it's 15 miles from where I'm parking to the saddle. And I ain't made it anywhere close yet. I'm not even BS it. And I only log my uphill miles, and I'm probably sidetracking a little bit. So Saturdays is my mountain run, and then I'll come back and I'll do any prep that I have to do. And then it's, you know, consumptive time, right? Whether it be Dan Staton, Paul Medell, Mike Batiste, Dirk Durham, I try and get a couple of those. And actually, you know who's, dude, Chris Rowe, like I've heard of Chris Rowe for a long time, Rowe Hunting Resources, and I started listening. Oh, I'm in love with that man. No homo. that guy, like, he's my spirit podcaster, spirit animal. I mean, that dude is solid, right? And then just his background and years of that wildlife biology thing, absolutely stellar. Anywho, so I'll consume at least 3 to 4 podcasts or, you know, something consumptive throughout the week and add that into it. And then most of the time is really just spent working out, whether it's with the bow, you know, or in here in the garage doing step ups and, you know, talking about shooting under duress and things like that, or long holds and then, you know, letting down, drawing again, hold long, shooting. So it's just, it's a mix of that stuff throughout the week on top of Western Contours and the regular job. And then I started a little gig called Western Fly Covers. So yeah, that didn't break my schedule down, but that is it in a nutshell. And then on top of that 75 hard thing now, it's all go. There's not a wasted moment.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of people know what 75 hard is at this point. Like it's, you know, it's kind of a niche thing at first, and then now it's expanded and a lot of different people are doing it. But basically, you know, just to explain to folks listening, the idea behind 75 hard is it's something you do every single day. It's a set of requirements you have to do every single day. The reason they call it 75 hard is because it's hard. if you miss one day, if you miss a single minute of doing one of these things one day, you have to start over completely again. And it's 2 45 minute workouts. One has to be outside, right?
Yes.
You have to stick to a diet. Doesn't specify what diet, but you have to decide it and stick to it. Mm-hmm. No alcohol. What is it? How long you have to read as well, right?
It's 10 pages of reading.
10 pages of reading. And then
no cheat meals.
Yeah. The no cheat meals with the diet. Am I missing anything else?
See, 10 pages of reading, 2 45 minute workouts, one outside, no alcohol, stick to a diet. Oh, and then the hardest one is the freaking everyday progress picture.
That's right. Yeah. That's the one that's easy to forget too.
You know what? It's almost okay. So I'm in my fourth week and it's almost reset me 3 times. And you would think like something so medial, right? It just take the picture, but you'll forget it, right? And it's, for me, it's an end of the day thing. Typically I'm about to get in the shower, I'll snap the picture. And there's a couple nights, the one was close, dude. It was, so I have mine set at midnight. So at midnight, that's my start over point. And I was in bed, sleep, somehow woke up and go, oh crap. I looked at the time. It's 12 minutes to midnight, dude. I jumped up. I grabbed the phone. My phone's updating. And I'm like, no, what do I do? What do I do? So I run in the kitchen and I grab my work phone off the charger. I ran the bathroom, lift up the shirt, snap the picture, and was like, I did it.
I was going to say, you go in the junk drawer, you find the 25-year-old digital camera.
Yeah.
A 3-megapixel digital camera.
You know, and I was saying, like, I didn't plan to do it, right? I saw it and I saw people doing it. And I listened to Andy Frisella when it was the MF CEO, been dealing with the first form stuff for years now. And I was just like, let's just see what it's about, right? Let's see if I gain any benefit. We could all stand to improve in some aspect, right? And what was funny, Sam, is that looking at it, and as I started going through it, within the first few days, I was amazed, right? Because like I said, I schedule my week. My week is scheduled every Sunday. I know what's going on, whether it's with work or, you know, I know what's going on every day. And the anomaly would be if my wife says, hey, let's do something Saturday afternoon, which is kind of the offshoot. To realize how much time I was spending on things already, but then to see how much time I was wasting that I could be using to be productive in some aspect, whether it's just the 10 pages of reading. Dude, in 4 weeks, I've gone through 2.5 books. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you the last time that I read a book from cover to cover. I'm going to say that it was, I say high school, but it probably wasn't in high school where I read a book cover to cover like that. And I've gone through 2.5 books. So to see, to realize how productive you could be, and especially because it's a nonfiction book, right? Whether it's an entrepreneurial book or something, you know, a self-help type book.
Yeah.
Like you do yoga, right? So last year or right before COVID, I think that was the December before I got into yoga. And man, I mean, you want to talk about something that's life-changing. And yoga was kind of taken away with COVID, right? Studios shut down and I really fell off on the practice. Because being new to yoga, you know, a lot of the flow and everything is what you get out of the studio you're going to. So anywho, I started reading. I don't know if you ever heard of Dylan Werner. He's a badass yoga instructor. So I got one of his books and it's called Illuminated Breath. And it just talks about breathing and that cycle and everything. And it combines, you know, that Eastern philosophy of yoga with Western medicine to kind of make the connection. So it's, you know, understandable, right?
Yeah.
Like anatomy, physiology and Western medicine for me is pretty easy. I went to school for paramedicine and blah, 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 blah. So that part of it is really easy. Now, when you take the Eastern philosophy and combine that, it was just like, wow, these lights started coming on. It's just a great read, man. I digress, but it's amazing that I was able to find aspects where I wasn't spending time on something productive. And it really shocked the shit out of me. You know, it was just like, wow, I'm wasting. And it doesn't sound like that much, right? But I'm wasting 2.5 hours a day that I could be doing something productive. And what we tell ourselves is, oh, I'm tired, or I need to relax, or I need to rest. I need to unwind. Dude, I'm going to bed at, you know, 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and I'm not missing a beat, and I don't feel any different. I actually feel better. I feel more productive. I feel more energized. I feel like I'm utilizing the time better instead of just wasting away on something. And it's also led me to devalue some things like social media. You know what I mean? Yo, it's like, what a absolute waste of shit right there. And I'm not a TV guy anyway. So that part's easy. Alcohol. My wife forces me to have a social drink every now and again. Not a big drinker anyway, but yeah, it ain't for everybody. Cause it is difficult, but I think it's worth it. I think if somebody gets in there and realizes, you know, what they're pissing away, it's awesome. I can't wait to see the effect after the 75 and then see how I translate that into my pursuit on the mountain.
Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
You know, I think it's one of those things where people need to do hard shit. Mm-hmm. Like whether 75 hard is right for you or not, but like, or even if you look at like 75 hard and it's like, okay, these aren't really necessarily the goals I have or whatever. You should try it anyway, just because because I think a lot of people look at that and they look at it where it's like, okay, well, you know, the fitness, it's 75 hard. It focused on the fitness. And I'm already fit and I read a lot and, you know, I don't have problems with alcohol, so I don't need to do it. That's not what it's about. It's not like trying to wean you off of alcohol and like get you fit. That's a byproduct of the whole idea. Is it's all mental. It's a mental thing. It's meant to make you more mentally strong than anything else. Everything else is just a byproduct. It teaches you how to do hard shit and stick to it. And I think more people need to do hard stuff. And it's like, I feel like I've had a lot of podcasts recently where we've talked about just people are freaking soft. Like I'm soft. Like I'll admit it. I sometimes I wake up and like when I go to work out and I just realize how soft I've gotten and how out of the habit and lazy I've gotten. It's like, I was thinking about it today. I'm like, people that don't improve themselves just are gross. Not like looking at someone and being like, oh yeah, you're physically unattractive. But like people that don't, I find people gross when they just don't want to improve themselves. And when they're sedentary and don't want to, I don't know.
It's complacency, right? We get so comfortable with comfort that anything that challenges us is what we want to push away. And it should be the exact opposite, right? We should welcome those challenges and welcome that growth. We seem to forget that that's what grows us, you know, and we'd rather sit back and look at all the blue hues off the screens and everything else. And dude, that just isn't it. And I think, I mean, look at hunting, right? Hunting, if honestly, if it was easy, half of us wouldn't go after it, right? Mm-hmm. So it was, to me, it's just like another brick in the wall for to just be the best me that I could be, and not in comparison with anybody else, just to one up myself. There's another cliche, right? But it really is, man. It is about doing harder shit, you know, and committing to something. It's so easy for us to quit. We make it so easy. I mean, you could have sat there, started your knife making endeavor, and just said, oh, you know, shit, it's too hot, man. Or, you know, that thing burned my hands, or that flame shooting out of that when I'm dipping. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to deal with that shit. It's just so easy for us.
It's 20 below in Montana and I'm forging in my garage and I have to keep the door open. Yeah, no, that sucks.
I mean, but it's so easy for us to quit on shit. You know, we it's just everything around us is telling us to stop and take the easy way out. Right. And there's zero. Absolutely. In my opinion, absolutely zero growth comes from that crap. And I ain't a young dude. I don't want anything easy.
Well, you know, nothing's rewarding when it comes easy. Nah. Like it's just, yeah, you may get some instant satisfaction. We were talking about this earlier. You know, a lot of people assume that, you know, whatever, we got a following, we run podcasts, so yeah, we must get free shit all the time. That's how it works.
Right.
Yeah, how many cooler companies are you sponsored by?
Yeah, dude, I can't even get them to respond.
you just got to put on the thong and get your ass out there.
It's, you know what? I don't know if you've seen it, man. I got a little picture of me with the bow upside down. Photoshop is a mofo, man. Put my face on one of those things a little while back, and every once in a while, I'll drop that thing. Like, can I get a sponsor? But I mean, that is a funny aspect of that whole thing. And we were, you know, like we were saying, like, would I turn down anything that I found I might have some value in for free? Probably not, just like most folks. But am I going to say it's the greatest thing ever in the world? Absolutely not. There's more value in me paying for that. I'll get more value out of it, right? I'm going to appreciate it, just like anything, right? Like with kids, right? You don't want to just give them everything. You want them to earn it. So there's some value in it for them. I'll take this bow all day for free. So don't take me wrong, but it's something that I've shot for a long time. And, but if you hit me with a free, can you push this? Hell no, it's not happening. Yeah. It has to work for me and what I'm doing.
Yeah, I don't know. We totally lost my train of thought what I was about to say. Oh, man. But it's what we were saying is I think that's one of the things that's so attractive and rewarding about elk hunting is that it's hard and that the success rate is so low. You know, I feel like I always overestimate it, but it's like, is it what, 12% across like rifle and archery and then even lower for archery? Or is it?
Yeah, I think it's archery is 10. And I, you know, it looks like it's gone up over as I get into other states. I'm going to say that, you know, overall is probably sitting around 16%, I think, and 10% in the archery realm.
Yeah, but it's, you know, and it's I love seeing people's faces that aren't familiar with hunting when you kind of explain the whole thing where you're like, yeah, I pay this much to go hunt an animal. And then you say like, oh, yeah, it's like a 16% success rate. That doesn't sound all that low. Like it sounds low, but it's not like a shock. But then it
doesn't click.
You explain it. You're like that, you know, that means that. Oh my gosh, my math just failed me. Wow, that was really sad. I tried to do basic subtraction.
84%
right in my head. Yes. Wow. Wow. I'm just going to you can finish the podcast. I'm just going to go home. I'm just going to leave.
No, and I think, yeah, you I tell don't someone. Think most I don't think most hunters even realize what that means, right? To be, yeah. if you go with archery, right, we say it, oh, you want to be, you want to be that in that 10%. But man, that means that 89% of folks are spending, you know, if you're out of state, 600-700, I just dropped $1,200 on a tag, you know, applying for Wyoming on a special. Most folks will look at you and go, why the heck would you want to do that? But it goes back to what we were saying, right? Is that's where the growth comes from. And I don't think until you're out in the elk woods and you understand what that pursuit is and you get that insight to yourself at the end of that. Because like we were saying earlier, right? You were saying that, you recorded that first elk hunt and you were talking to yourself every night and you could progressively hear yourself on that decline. But when you leave the woods and you go back and you reflect on those moments and think about what you took on and what you overcome, not knowing anything at that point, dude, the growth in that and the inspiration that you find within yourself to go pursue something, you don't have to look anywhere else for that inspiration. Mm-hmm. And it just happens to be one of the baddest freaking animals on the planet, right?
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? And so you get to look at these things that you're doing in the woods and you're like, I can legitimately say, and I don't mean this in any like arrogant way, I'm freaking badass. I did that. You know what I mean? And that to me, that every hunter should have that moment, right? That prideful moment. I don't care how you base your success or how you look at success, if it's a notch tag or it's time in the woods, but you know, overcoming some of those challenges, man, against nature, and you're trying to beat hundreds and thousands of years of evolution. You've been on this planet for a blink of an eye in terms of that evolution, dude. It's next level. It is. I love elk. Oh,
dude, you know, people look at us like we're crazy. You tell them that, how much money do people spend though to go find themselves, to learn about themselves, to find that mental clarity? So many self-help books and videos and this and that and the other. And those same people will look at, again, like you said, well, when you tell them, yeah, I just paid $1,200 for a Montana, you know, a Montana general permit. And I've probably got, yeah, and 12% chance to actually come home with something. But those same people will go out and spend, when all said and done, thousands of dollars on therapists and books and you know, not talking shit about going to therapy or buying those books. Trust me, I've got a whole cupboard over here of, you know, those same books by like, you know, motivational dudes. And I'm not talking crap about therapy. Like, shoot, I'm probably going to go talk to someone. Like, it is a good thing to learn about yourself, but I guarantee you spend, you know, a week out in the woods,
you're going to learn,
you know, you're going to learn real quick.
You're going to learn a lot about yourself.
You're going to learn about stuff. You're going to learn about things. You could do things you never knew you were capable of, whether that's just as basic as staying out in the woods for a freaking week for a lot of people.
A night. I know guys that have run and were like, no, I'm not doing this tent in the middle of the woods by myself. I'm going and sleeping in the truck and I'm out tomorrow. I heard that story more than once over the years. My buddy was actually on a roof next door giving an estimate. And he went out on his own last year His buddy flaked out on him. He lasted 2 days. And this guy hunts a lot. And he lasted 2 days because of that. And you get into your head and he regrets it now. Right. But overcoming that stuff, man, in my opinion, you're not going to find it anywhere else. I don't give a shit what you do. It doesn't, I've done a lot of stuff, right? I rode motorcycles, dirt in the street, track, snowboard. I still snowboard. I love snowboarding. But none of that has ever done what hunting has done for me in terms of my personal growth, my personal development, my mental maturity than hunting. You have to face those things on the mountain, in the woods, whatever it is. Now, our tree stand brethren that, you know, are down south and back east, they got it a little different. So those guys probably aren't as manly as most of us out here in the West.
Thanks, man. It's been a while. It's been a while since I've gotten hate mail.
I had to. I love, but that, you know, I had to do it because I got some friends that are probably going to listen. So we had to hit them. Yeah. But I mean, that's where I started here, because that was what hunting was, looking from the outside in. Even as a Western hunter, right? Back in day, man, I'm popping in a VHS and I'm looking at a dude in a tree stand. Shit, some of my first experiences were in a tree stand. Had no idea what I was doing, right? But I was sitting in that damn tree 12 feet off the ground, pissing my pants like, oh, man. I had to get that little jab in there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, same thing for me. My very first hunt was, you know, I mean, not counting shooting pigeons off the roof with my BB gun. But my very first hunt was, I went out with my now ex to Mississippi to visit her family and brought my bow and my camo. And, you know, they put me up in the tree stand. And the first, oh man, I went out with her cousin first, and her cousin put me up in this tree stand. And he's like, this is like the money spot where all the action happens. He was giving me the good spot. He's like, but the tree stand's a little sketchy. And it was like, the tree stand wasn't actually super sketchy in and of itself, but the way it was like angled on the tree. So you got the ladder like on one side, the way they had to set it up with the branches. So the ladder's on one side. And then there's this like giant gap between the top rung of the ladder and the tree stand. So it's not like the one you get up and like you're comfortable and, you know, you hop right in, and it is the sketchiest thing. You have to like get up and like you're hugging the tree while only your feet are on the on the tree stand. And it was terrifying enough getting in this thing. Getting out.
That's next level.
I don't know how I did not wet myself. I will admit that right here now. I was like, because you kind of had to like hang from the tree stand and then like find the thing with your boots.
You know, and as much as I'll poke fun of it, and that's just because I like sharing that banter with those guys. So I, you know, to your guys that don't know me, it's just me joking. It takes the mental capacity to sit for 10, 12 hours in a tree stand, dude. I honestly, that trumps me looking at 1200 foot of 45 foot or 40 degree incline and saying, okay, I'm going up that. Yeah. There, I can mental through that all day. Sitting there for that amount of time in hopes that buck comes through. No, bro, I am not the guy. I cannot do it mentally.
I've talked about that on the podcast before. It is a different type of mental strength to do that, because you can't just like sit there and completely shut off. You have to be alert that entire freaking time. And, you know, you're sitting there. If you hop on your phone and you miss that one chance at a buck that comes through, or you make a little too much noise or too much movement, whatever it happens to be, and you just aren't focused, you lose your opportunity. And, you know, some places, yeah, you get a bunch of opportunity. Other places, you'll be sitting there for 8 hours in that stinking tree stand, and you have that one split second where, you know, he comes out and he shows himself.
Stinking is right.
Freaking whitetail. Who wants whitetail anyway?
that's next level, man. But you know, like I said, I had to throw that little jab into our brethren. But to me, any hunting is you know, a good time, man.
Oh, for sure. And well, you know, like we were talking earlier, it's like I'm trying to expand out and do lots of different stuff because elks, you know, I've said a million times, elk's my passion. Like that is, I think they're the coolest animal on freaking earth. I mean, if you, again, you tried to describe them. Somebody was think if to somebody that never seen them, never heard of it. They'd think you were like trying to describe them some weird fanciful animal from a fantasy film or something.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's like Pegasus, man.
Oh man. And the areas where you hunt them are, there's nothing like it. Like being in those places, just the forest and the mountains and the views, and there's just nothing better than it on earth.
But I don't think so.
I love every aspect of hunting. And if mm-hmm. I am given an opportunity to go hunt, and I'm sure Andy will roll his eyes at me if he hears this. I'm about to say, if I'm given an opportunity to hunt, I will take it. And I've missed so many opportunities with Andy to go hunt. it's like always been the wrong timing when he invites me out. But you know, I will take any opportunity to hunt anything, man. You want to take me with you want to rock some 22s and you want to go full redneck squirrel hunt. Let's do that crap and make some bomb ass stew afterwards. Like, you know, you want to sit me down. I love predator hunting, man. I was, you know, I'm getting ready for black bear season right now for spring bear. And I'm just, you know, it's getting me pumped again, just about like calling for coyotes and foxes and bobcats and stuff again too. And I'm like, man, I really need to just get out more. Like predator hunting's like the low hanging fruit, man. You're jonesing to do some hunting anyway. I don't know of many states where you can't just, as long as you have your license, you can't just go out and call for predators. It's like the easiest thing on earth, man.
And you know what too? And it's almost, and I've changed my thought process on this, right? Because like bear, right? That's always been an opportunistic kind of tag for me. But then as we look at predators on the landscape, you know, it's almost a requirement at this point, right? If we are, as sportsmen, are legitimately concerned with our, you know, our herds, right? We got to impact that. And part of us having that impact is going out there and managing that predator population. So that's one of the things that I'm going to be better on, especially here at home with the hurting numbers and how we see it, right? Mountain lions protected, bobcats protected. The bears are in trouble this year. At least one of them. It is California.
Oh man. So
at least one of them in the fall season is in trouble.
I'm excited this year. Like I'm bound and determined to get out after bears. And I've done a few bear episodes just recently. And it's cause I always told myself I've been buying a bear tag for like 5 years at this point. I've legitimately gone out after bears in California like once.
And dude, we have a lot of bear, man. Here, you know, I'm in SoCal and you look at Angeles National, man, and you look at some of the communities around, you know, the foothills there, and there are some freaking giants, dude. I have one on camera for the last 2 years, and the SOB is nocturnal as can be. And he is, I mean, you can, his legs look like they're about that big because this guy is so round and robust.
Oh man.
And I can't, we can't get him on days, man. He just not having it.
I don't know, man. I've, it's such a new thing to me. I'm so like in the world of, stuck in that world of elk hunting. It's like, they're so different in how you have to chase them and all that stuff. It's a whole new mindset, you know, and it's cool to learn something brand spanking new. Oh, but yeah. I feel like I'm a little kid running in there again.
And there's so, that's the hard part with elk, right? Is where do you start with elk? Because everything that when you first get into it is about the sex appeal part of it, right? Is, you know, bugling bulls screaming in your face. And they're running in, you know, with their eyes just back and just snarling and snotting. And then you get to the elk woods and it's not the case, right? I mean, 95% of the time, that's not the case, at least in my experience. I've had one experience where that was the case, Errol, my Wyoming bull. But outside of that, man, it is, how do you approach these animals? Because I got a hold up bull. And as Paul Medell likes to remind you, that did the bull hold up or did you? But, you know, how do you work a silent bull? So when they present something new to you, how do you respond to that? And then being able to adapt to that situation, and the ebb and flow of elk hunting is just, man, I think that's where the part of me is so enamored, right? Because I have this scenario, I cold call and I have this bull get in and, you know, don't have a shot, or cow call. And then here comes, you know, a small herd and this bull is gathering and he comes, but doesn't present a shot and the cows are there. And so it's like, how do you work through all that stuff, man? And that part of it is ever adapting to it and getting the understanding of the animal by those missed opportunities, those failed attempts. I just, as stupid as it sounds, I love it. I'll spend that $700-$800 to fail. And it sounds weird. But I'll spend that $700-$800 to fail, if that's what it means for me to get better in that game, to have that firsthand experience is just, man, just being amongst them and getting closer and closer and closer. it's every penny of it, man. I just love it.
I'd say, you know, failing at elk hunting is better than succeeding at a pig hunt any day.
Yeah. Although, I mean, pig is fun, dude. Like I enjoy chasing them suckers, especially like, you know, Central Coast here. I got a little spot by Kalinga. That's just fun as all get up, man. And last year, those pigs, they were just, the numbers were insane. And they're wily, like they don't stop moving, right? So they're going to test you, and just a blast to hunt them, man. They're a fun animal. I can't compare them to elk, but they are absolutely a fun animal to chase.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
So, dude, believe it or not, I have never taken a pig.
No way.
Never in my life. I went out to Texas with Jess Byers, and Hearn Braxton took me around. And you know, I did a couple episodes talking about that, but they took me out and we did it. And I stuck one and we thought it had literally dropped 10 feet away. We never found it. We could not ever found it. And that's the closest I've ever come to taking a pig.
Damn.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, we have to plan something here. Get you back out here for a weekend and go chase them.
See, now I got to buy that non-resident California tag.
You know what? It can't be that much, though.
I'm gonna look that up.
I think 145, if that. Hunting. I remember back in the day, dude, you could buy a couple pig tags. I think you got two or three in a booklet, and it was $35.
Yeah, I'm just curious right now. I'm curious what the non-resident license fee is. Man, there's some. I gotta admit, it's a little satisfying saying that. Oh man, non-resident hunting license, $183.60. That's not bad. That's average bad for like hunting out of state.
Yeah,
hunting
license out of price. State. Yeah, it's just. I mean, in California, right? Unless you're going to Texas, California is one of the. I'm going to say one of the premier states for hog hunting, right? And I think there here at least there's public land opportunity.
Yeah.
To go hunt them. You know, it, as difficult as it is, if you find the right piece of public that's bordering some ag fields and whatnot, you can get, like I said, last year, dude, we counted 250 pigs in a couple weekends.
Mm-hmm.
There ain't many places that could do that on public.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's to me, it's worth that. you know, you're going to have to notch your belt. You could put them next to that stink pig back there.
There you go. Yeah, that's my javelina right there. His name's Stuart.
Stuart is Tusky, man.
He was the lone javelina. He was none of the ladies liked him. He got shunned from the herd. So he was wandering.
They knew he was about to die.
He was the only javelina I saw that day, and it was the last day hunting. That's the way it goes in Arizona for me. Guaranteed last day. If you're ever hunting Arizona with me, don't expect me to fill a tag until the very last moment of the very last day. My deer, my elk, my javelina, all three. Very last moment, very last day.
But that says a lot, right, about pushing through, seeing it to the end.
Yeah, right. I mean, tying that all back together, it's like none of this stuff I would have, you know, ever harvested. My first deer, my first elk, this have like never would have harvested it if I had just been like, screw it. And you know, there's a couple different types of giving up. You know, yeah, you can pack up and go home, and you know, that's the big obvious grand way to give up, or you know, just even go back to town or whatever and hang out in town for a few days. But you can give up without ever leaving the woods, man.
Oh, absolutely.
And
heck yeah.
I've done that more than I care to admit. You know, you'll be out on an elk hunt. You're like, and it's almost worse. I feel like it's almost like you're doing a disservice to hunting and the outdoors when you're doing that. When you're like an imposter, you're out there. You're like, oh yeah, I'm still hunting. And in your mind, you're not hunting
anymore. You're not hunting.
You're just going through the motions. And
yeah.
I've definitely been there on elk hunts, man, where you're going through the motions, but you're not hunting anymore. That's like the worst type of giving up in my mind.
Yeah. And I've done that like early on with deer. I haven't done it with elk. And that probably comes with, you know, the years of chasing deer and pig. But I did it, man. I did it once where it was just like, okay, I'm here, walk out. And I think that was probably like year four or five. I don't know. I regret missing that year. I was like, what am I doing? I haven't seen an animal. That was my fourth year. I hadn't seen an animal. Couldn't figure it out. And I was just like, I'm something that I wanted to do my entire life, as far back as I can remember. And I quit that year. And I regret to this day, man, taking that year off. It literally drives me crazy. And that's one of my reflections at the beginning of just about every season. Like, how am I going into this year? And I always remember that one freaking year that I didn't go, you know what I mean? It wasn't about the times where I peeled off the mountain for whatever reason, just that one year where I said, I'm not buying a tag. My family's young. I'm wasting time. I'm wasting money. And I regret that ever since then, man. It just drives me nuts.
All right, man. So tying it all together, somebody wants to get into elk hunting this year. I've had a lot of people actually recently ask me, you know, in a couple of groups that I'm part of where, you know, people are interested in getting into hunting and they're like, okay, man, you know, hey, is it too late for me to get into elk hunting this year? And I'm the first person to be like, hell no, it's never too late to get into elk hunting. So if somebody's trying to go on their first elk hunt this year, get ready for it, whatever it happens to be, what are your top tips, to kind of wind this all together?
Top tips, go for it. Wherever you think your shortcoming is at, don't let that hold you back. Hone in on it, work on it. You got some time, and just go after it. The worst that could happen is you go out on the mountain and you fail miserably in terms of punching your tag, right? That
you
is
do some worst. Like tear both of your knees and have to get carried out on horseback. Like, yeah. I mean,
you were out there. That's the thing, right? Yeah. So regardless of wherever you think you are, not being prepared, things like that, you're never going to fully know until you're on the mountain. Right. And a buddy of mine, 4 years shooting a bow, hadn't been on a hunt. Right. He knew that's why he started archery. And I'm like, dude, what are you waiting on? Well, I don't know if I'm ready. Well, how will you ever know if you're ready? If you don't it's like, you know, can I swim in the deep end? Well, I can swim in the shallow end. So just go jump in the damn deep end and get after it. Right. I would say that's the number one. You're going to fail. right? You're going to fall down, and you can't fail or fall down if you're sitting at home in the, on the couch watching YouTube, wondering if you're ready or not. You know, just go get out on the mountain. And with all the resources, be it Sam, be it myself, the quick and easy DM and on social media, don't be scared to ask for information. Yeah, guys will ream you about, you know, asking for a spot. Don't ask for a spot. Just, you know, what are the top three things I need? You need proficiency with your weapon. You need to know how long you're going to be there and, you know, adequate gear and survival provisions, and just the right attitude. I mean, that to me, that's it. That's the biggest thing. You know, everything else is just you wondering whether or not you're going to ever do it. And if you delay it this year, it's one less year you're out there learning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So nutshelled it.
All right. So folks want to follow along. Where can they find you? Where can they find the podcast?
On social, Western Contours, and then there's Guy_Western Contours, which is kind of like a personal page I really don't mess with. I think with the 75 hard thing, I was doing that for myself, and I think I'm going to put stuff on there just to help maybe motivate folks, right? I think mm-hmm. there's benefit to it. So I don't really mess with it. WesternContours.com, and then Western Contours podcast on just about every major platform. That's all I got.
All right, man. Well, I will make sure to link to that on the show notes page. That will be thewildinitiative.com/199. Man, I'm
199.
200 episodes. Man, why do you, I'm still amazed. Man, do you ever get that? Like somebody comes up and's like, man, I listened to the podcast. You're like, that's weird.
Yeah. Reaching out to a couple people, and even like being on, you know, yours, but being on someone else's, Elk Bros, Joe Gillia, he was like, yeah, man, when I decided I was going to start this, you know, this podcast with the guys, I was looking for podcasts, and yours was one I was listening to kind of see, you know, what to do. And I'm like, how the heck does that work? It's like, man, oh man, I'm the wrong guy. But no, dude, it is something else, man. What a beautiful thing we have in terms of, you know, being on this side of the microphone or that side of the microphone in this case, with these platforms and being able to connect with like-minded people. Again, a cliche, man, it's just something wonderful.
I mean, that's of all the benefits of, you know, the many benefits of running this podcast, because we make grand amounts of money by doing this. You know, of all the benefits of the podcast, and there are a lot of benefits of running this and a lot of self-satisfaction and stuff, but the people I get to meet, and with those people, the experiences I get to have are, you know, one of the most rewarding things of my life. And
absolutely.
So on that note, brother, thank you so much for hopping on. I'm glad we finally did it. You know, yeah, we were talking, man. I'm like, yeah, I think we were having the conversation before. It's like, wait, no, I haven't had him on. How have I not had you on the podcast yet?
Well, that's like last year in Utah, right? We saw each other a couple of times, and it's busier than I'll get up there. And yeah. I was like, this year you were actually on my list. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get Sam to sit down with me in the booth and, you know, just shoot the mess for a little bit. And then, Coco 19 hit us and, you know, kind of thwarted my entire deal leading up to Hunt Expo this year. So that was a bummer, but we'll have to make up for that. You know, this year coming up and sit down and chop it up in there.
Absolutely. Yeah,
man, I appreciate you having me on, man. Like I said, it's always an honor to share that time, man. It's I love following you. The knife thing, man. Okay, I'm just saying it, right? That you guys buy this guy's knives, because I've never seen anybody, I dabbled in that, I've never seen anybody that fast produce what Sam is producing. So, you know, order a knife, get cut, help him support his new addiction.
Heck yeah, man. Let me help support the podcast, because let's face it, that's where all that knife money is going, is just keep this thing afloat.
That's it, man. Yeah, it's really income out. That's what, you know, like I said, I'm gonna plug Western Fly Covers, right? So
it's
ultralight gear. What I started with was pack flies and bino flies. So as we're out, you know, in the snow, even in the dry months when it's dusty, right, we want to keep our optics clean, dry. It's a rain cover or a fly that goes over your bino harness, because a lot of the bino harnesses, as great as they are not fully waterproof. And our lenses fog, things like that on our binos. So got the bino fly, got the pack flies that'll fit anywhere from an 18 cubic inch to about a 7,000 cubic inch. And if you got something larger that you want to deal with or smaller, hit me up. But it's Western Fly Covers. You guys check that out. Shameless plug. That helps me support my podcast.
Awesome. Well, I will also make sure to link to that on the show notes page. Again, brother, thank you so much for hopping on.
Thank you, man. We'll talk to you.
All right, y'all. That'll do it for this episode of The Wild Initiative. Make sure to check out the show notes page at thewildinitiative.com/199 to get links to everything we talked about in today's episode. That'll do it for this week. Looking forward to next time. But until then, I hope this episode inspired you to get involved, get outdoors, and plan your initiative for the wild.
Thank you for listening to The Wild Initiative. Please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher, and head on over to thewildinitiative.com to get show notes, check out the blog, gear discounts, other podcasts from the Wild Initiative family, and more.
Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
You want to succeed. You want to fish. You want to be one of the greatest.
Tune in to West Marine's Life on the Water, presented by Costa Custom Boats, every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.